Session number 27346, Reel 1.
Robert Thornton, Reel 1. Could you tell me where and when you were born, please?
I was born in Leith, and it must have been 81 years ago. So, I think about 1924.
And what did your father do for a living?
He was an ex-gunner in the Navy, and he then worked for the Customs and Excise in Leith, and that's all he did in all his life.
What did his job entail?
I think his job was to see that things which belonged to the government were not played with.
And did you have any brothers and sisters?
I have two sisters, no brothers.
And what about your education? Where did your education start?
I went to Leith Academy, which was quite an ordinary school in Leith, and fortunately, or otherwise, I found it very easy to come out on top.
Did you have any favourite subjects while you were at school?
Mathematics.
And what about sport and recreation? What type of things did you do? Hobbies and sports, that type of thing?
I was really into rugby, big time, from the age of about four.
Was it a popular game in the area? Was it something that everybody played? Or
all the best schools in Edinburgh played rugby, and but there weren't many of them. And when I joined the Navy, eventually, I quickly became the top rugby man in wherever I was, and that's why I've had so many injuries.
Did you play a specific position?
Yes, by and large, a centre.
What did you enjoy so much about rugby? What are the things that you would say make the game for you?
Well, the sheer pleasure of thumping one's way through a bit of a tough area and scoring, and also goal kicking.
So with your education, did that progress on later? Did you go elsewhere after you?
I won a scholarship in Edinburgh, and but it I didn't feel that I was getting very far with it, and I found that at weekends, in other words, by that time I was 15, I worked for bookmakers on Sundays, and everybody was at that time was putting their money on football games, and so every Sunday I went in at 9 o'clock in the morning until about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So I didn't become very religious. I was into bookkeeping, you could say.
And at that time, obviously considering what happened to you and what your wartime career, had you had any interest in the sea or in aviation in any way?
I was interested in the sea and aviation, but particularly the sea. I was, from the age of four, I was swimming in the sea off the port of Leith, and people would say I was crazy, but I was a fish in the sea. And therefore, when I eventually got into the Navy, it was no bother to me to go into the sea. And indeed, any ship I was on, the first thing I did, and I didn't say anything to anybody, I got off the ship and into the sea just to find out what I might have to do one day. And I did that all the time.
So were you quite a proficient swimmer then, would you say?
A proficient
swimmer?
I was a strong swimmer. I wouldn't say I was very quick, but I could stay forever.
And was Leith a busy port at that time?
No. No, it was declining. As I understand it, it's become stronger again. I went down a year or two back to have another look at it, and it had there was more money being poured into Leith, and which I was very pleased to see. And but in those days, it was all a bit poor.
And what about the aviation element? How did you follow an interest in aviation?
I was taken by the idea of flying, and I was very much taken by the idea of navigation. And right from, I suppose, the age of 8 or 9, I was playing with navigation. And therefore, when the Navy said that they thought I would be a good navigator, I went with it.
What was the fascination in navigation? Was it the idea of getting yourself from one place to another?
Getting from A to B, and not getting lost. I thought, I tried that in the hills. I would do it in the hills around Edinburgh, and I got awfully good at that, not getting lost.
Obviously, growing up in the 30s, were you aware of the situation in Europe developing?
Yes.
To what extent were you?
Well, I it's a bit difficult at this distance to reply to that, but I sort of knew that we were running towards trouble, but it didn't register very strongly with me, but I was aware of it, and for that reason, when the time came, I was in right away.
Do you have any memories of the actual declaration of war? I'm thinking of the radio broadcast that Chamberlain made.
No. I knew it had happened, and I've no doubt that I'd heard it being stated on the telly and all that. But I was going anyway. I went. The Navy wouldn't take you until you were 18, and I went on my 18th birthday to the Navy. I didn't hang about.
And I take it there wasn't really a question of which service you wanted to go into?
No question.
So were you a volunteer as such?
Yes.
With the Navy rather than conscripted?
Yes.
In?
Yes.
How did you go about with that process? Where did you go to, and what did they do at that initial interview?
I went to England from Scotland, and I went to Southwest England, and I immediately, I was 18, I became head boy. Sorry about this. But there were two things about it. They had a very nice rugby club, and I was it right away. And I came up, I think, as high as you could come out at the end of it all. Of, I think it was 10 weeks or something like that. I knew I was going to become a naval officer. I knew that. And I knew it would be the Fleet Air Arm. I was just lucky. No, I have been lucky because I'm still alive, I knew I would be okay. I would win.
So, on volunteering for the Fleet Air Arm, how did you hear that you've been called up for your training? Did you receive a letter, or were you in the railway warrant?
Because of the level of that I'd achieved in the, I think it was 10 weeks, I was called to Bristol. I met four very senior old gentlemen who, when I said it's the Fleet Air Arm, they took me in, as it were. That was instant. So it was what I wanted, and I got it.
How did the training start?
It started in Portsmouth. And we had, I think, 10 weeks of training, which had very little to do with flying. It had to do with the Navy. At the end of that, I was transferred to Scotland, which was fine. I think it was a period of about 5 or 6 months training.
So that first period at Portsmouth, was it a familiarisation with the Navy itself, would you say?
Yes, it was a very big naval base, and it was being bombed regularly. So one had a choice of things to do. You can run about, you can run away, or you could look at it. I enjoyed looking at these bombs that were falling on us, it was fun.
What about your accommodation while you were at Portsmouth? Where was that?
In the naval base. There's a huge naval base, still there.
And were you sleeping in a hammock at the time?
Sometimes. It depended on how many people were passing through. Generally speaking, the answer is yes, I was in a hammock. Because there were huge numbers passing through Portsmouth.
What year had you actually arrived at Portsmouth when you started your training?
I was 18, so it must have been 42.
And this initial part of your training, what was the pattern of it? What was the types of things that were trying to familiarise you with the Navy?
I think initially, just to get the feel of the Navy, and then to indicate to me the seriousness of what we were about to do. There was a strong message that came from the Navy to me and to people like me that you're going to get killed.
So they were inducting you with a sense of purpose with the service, which is
definitely.
At that stage, then obviously you were indoctrinated into the Navy. When you moved to Scotland, was that specifically for Fleet Air Arm or flying training at that stage?
Yes.
Where did you go to?
To an airfield just south of Dundee, and which is now closed. And there were several airfields on the North Sea there, and I think I had a period there of must have been six months. They did it pretty thoroughly, so I went into flying right away, and the idea being that not that we ourselves would fly, but that we would know what it was all about.
Had the selection come when you initially, when you'd seen the senior naval officers, that you were going to go in as an observer and navigate aircraft?
Yes.
So that's what you actually said, that was your choice of what
yes.
you wanted to do?
Yes.
So this initial training, was that to get you to understand how an aircraft operated and fly it to a certain level? Is
yes.
that what they were indoctrinating
yes.
in,
yes.
into the...
Yes, I at the end of it all, I felt, although I never, ever flew a plane, that I could have flown a plane. I didn't feel a bit nervy about it at all. But my main interest was navigation.
So with that period, did you have familiarisation flights in aircraft at all, at that initial stage, just to get you used to flying to start with?
I think most of the flying that we did just that, got us used to it. And there's no question that after 6 months of training, the death rate was quite high after. In other words, I began to hear only a month or two after getting into the air, and doing a lot of flying, I found that I was hearing of people I knew who were already dead.
Could you give me some idea? Because obviously navigation has changed slightly with the introduction of satellite
yes.
navigation and that sort of thing. What were the basic principles of navigation that you were practicing during that period of time? What are the things that you have to do at that level of navigation?
I think it was pretty thorough. I got the feeling from the beginning that it was a serious game, and that the principle would be that you could find your way back to the aircraft carrier, and I never lost that feeling that whatever it was I was going to do, I was going to know the way back, and also I wouldn't do silly things. There was a tendency for people to play games in the air, and in other words, not to do a good job, and I was resentful about that. I didn't like to hear about that, and therefore I really put my mind into it.
Are there any things, obviously, you're learning to navigate in Scotland,
mm-hmm.
again, in the air.
Yes.
Are there any potential threats navigating in that type of environment that you have to be aware of?
Yes, I think... The principal thing that struck me was that the aircraft that we were flying in were not very special, and that they were liable, therefore, to come down. As a matter of fact, not a lot did happen. We flew, and there was the occasional mess, and somebody got killed. The deaths didn't really start to happen until about 6 months had gone by, and we'd then gone out into the open field, and the deaths were rapid then.
Were there anything, I mean, what I was thinking of really within the, is there a problem when you're navigating in Scotland of avoiding mountain ranges or
there was a tendency among some of the younger pilots who had already qualified, as it were, and were doing the job of carrying the planes around to do silly things. And I was always quite clear in my mind that that's not what I'm here for. And so we could have a row. Now, at that time, I was not a naval officer, and they were naval officers, but that didn't stop me from pissing on them.
What were the type of games they would play with? What were the things they would do that you would consider foolish or foolhardy?
Generally speaking, it was messing about with the aeroplane, going up high and then diving to the ground and that sort of thing, which I thought was dead stupid, and didn't hesitate to say so. And that, I was really quite surprised at the stupid things they did.
Did you start to formulate at that time any kind of survival techniques?
Don't drink. I didn't drink. I wouldn't drink. I was going to survive.
Was drinking something that a lot of the pilot officers would do then?
Yes.
Even during the training period?
Yes.
And were there occasions when that would manifest itself, not just in the silly behaviour, but would it be noticeable if somebody had had too much to drink while they were flying?
I don't know, is the answer to that. But I knew I shouldn't be doing it, so I didn't.
And what type of aircraft were you training in?
Goodness me. Well, they're all elderly, but not too elderly. There was a number of American aircraft, and but not very many. But mostly they were tired out British machines. And but here I am.
So after that 6 months, what was your next move? Where did you go to then?
I've forgotten.
Would you be commissioned at the end of that 6 months?
Yes.
Would that be the
yes.
stage where...
I was a naval officer. And it cost me every penny I had to get that suit.
Can you remember what you had to kit yourself out with when you reached that stage? Was it a suit and other clothing? Or?
Yeah, well, there were two things. You had the naval officer's equipment, clothing, which was very nice, very special, and then you had other simpler things that you wore for flying. You didn't take your best suit up into an aeroplane.
What was the flying kit like in those days? Because I imagine it's changed considerably to this day.
Kit? I've no recollection of kit at all, other than I had a suit, and I had a hat which I put on very, very occasionally, and that was all there was.
So at that stage, were you then posted to your first squadron?
Yes. Yes.
Would that be 700 squadron you went to initially?
Yes.
What were they flying?
Would it be second-hand second-hand aircraft of the 30s.
Was it the Walrus? Would it be the Walrus you were?
I had time with the Walrus. Which I always liked, and Yes, the walrus was a frequent object of my interest. But quite quickly, I found myself right up in the north, in Scapa Flow. And quite quickly, people started to get killed. It was quite interesting that there seemed to be a system running by which you heard that so-and-so, who had been trained with you in the middle of Scotland, had been killed. And generally speaking, if he was a navigator, he'd been killed by his pilot.
So was that reinforcing a number of your beliefs about how aircraft should be flown and navigated?
I was tough about it. I was very, very sure that the aircraft were all right if you played with them properly and didn't mess about. And I didn't like messing about. I like to say we're going from A to B and we're going to come back to A again. And so I spent, I think, a lot of time at that time getting used to the idea of staying alive. I was pretty keen about that. And therefore, if somebody wanted to mess about, I didn't want to fly with them. I had to fly with them, I told them what I thought. And it didn't matter to me whether they were captains or admirals or whatever. I wanted to stay alive.
What were you doing? What was the squadron duties up at Scapa Flow?
It had been for a very long time the protection of the Navy in Scapa. There had been a terrible disaster with a German U-boat getting in, and this meant that if you were used as a flyer there, it was dead serious, and you spent a lot of time in those areas where you thought if there was going to be a German U-boat, you would be on the lookout for it. And I did a lot of that for, must have been 4 or 5 months, I imagine.
And where were you operating from?
From an airfield in the Orkneys.
What type of airfield was it? Was it a proper airfield or was it a grass strip or something
like
that?
It was a very grassy, but particularly good one. And I got quite used to the idea. I also did silly things like flying between the Old Man of Hoy and the island that he sprang from. So, and in fact, if you didn't do that, you've got no guts.
So was that a squadron kind of tradition?
That
was
a tradition that we are now going to fly between the Old Man of Hoy and Hoy, and you're going to like it.
How dangerous was doing that?
Not at all. No bother. I liked it.